hearer in that other room. And therefore, I just want to say to you in advance, I hope this is what you want. Each day, we'll go through a process, starting in a meditative state. Could you make it a little less echoey? Thanks. Yeah. Starting in a meditative state, and then moving into, come join the circle. Thanks. Moving into an experience of acquiring divine power. So I want to back up a minute and say, this season of the rose, we're talking about Hiramarsha Vinayakan's essential practices. So I am offering essential practices that can be very useful to you in working with the stuff of manifestation of life. And you can work with the stuff of manifestation in any number of ways. One way might be in your job. One way might be in your relationships with your family. One way might be in a yearning that you've had towards some sort of accomplishment. And another way might be the one that you're thinking of that I didn't mention. And along the way to that, I have discovered in my conversations with friends and with people that I've met along the path, along the way to that, you might find yourself from time to time apparently not succeeding. And so we're going to talk about that also, about that which happens, the choices you have when you are apparently not succeeding. Okay. Also, I want to highlight that I've been spending a lot of time the last few years with elders and healers in the indigenous nations. And when I'm calling them indigenous nations, because I think that when we call it indigenous peoples, we're not giving just respect where it's due. These really are different nations with different cultures, with different mores, with different attitudes. And I want to honor the many traditions that come through these cultures. And I also want to say that during the time that I was training, and I still consider myself a student, so let me say earlier years of training, when I was spending a lot of time with Pir Vilayat and Ayat Khan, he often said that the Sufi practices and the Sufi path was claimed by Islam, but actually existed way before Islam ever came about. And I have witnessed the truth of this as I have been spending more and more time with indigenous brothers and sisters. It's the same practices. It's the same truth. We put our covering on it, and each of them put their covering on it, but when we get right down to it, we live in the same joined whole, the same reality that my dear friend Mary Lyons would call the we. So we're a small enough number of people that we have an opportunity to talk to each other and to ask the question you don't want to ask to in a large group, say the thing that might be embarrassing to say if it were a different situation, and we can turn off the microphone at any time. So I want to really leave this a sacred space for us. Would that be all right? Is there anyone here that might be embarrassed to say, I want to talk and I don't want the mic? today where in the realm, let me say one more general thing, and that is there is the practice of meditation, which is, in my language, presence to the source of everything. Then there is the practice of receiving, which I called developing divine power, and that is the practice when you are allowing something to come to you. In meditation, in the beginning, you're reaching out, right? You're reaching towards, you're looking out for something that's beyond what exists. And so that second stage is then letting it come. Letting the gifts of that come to you. The third is then, now what? That place of now what, when you don't say exactly what you wanted to say or do exactly what you wanted to do, or you don't want to take that next step. And then is the activation. And is that activation place.
Thank you.
made up of billions of galaxies, each holding billions of stars. Somehow separate and yet part of a divine whole. A cosmic dance. A symphony of the spheres. Being. And in this experience, we are drawn to a recognition that there's something more. There's something else. First, it's like a very faint experience of the heart. A faint heartbeat. Gets our attention. But we're still aware of the universe. We're still aware of our place. And then we become, as that heartbeat stays the same, we become aware of a flow. Like the tide, the waves of the ocean flowing to the shore and then receding. And we realize there's breath. Flowing in of breath, coming deep, deep. A flowing in of the life of the universe, coming deep inside. And joyfully we give back a flow of breath. Universe flowing in, and we are answering with a flow like a dance flowing back. Yes, we're still aware of that universe, that cosmos, our place in it, and yet somehow there's this other inclusion of breath. And as that heartbeat continues, we become aware that there's form. breath is coming into something and somehow flowing also into the depth of that something, the depth of the heart, going deeper and deeper until it's met. By another universe within that breathes out. Breathing in from the furthest reaches of the universe into your being. Breathing out, answering in joy, maybe in love, maybe in harmony, maybe in beauty, maybe in pain. Breath in, breath out. And become aware of your feet, your hands, letting that breath not just come into the heart and to the deepest place of the heart, but begin to spread throughout your being. Touching your consciousness, yes, I am. Breath spreading, glory of the universe, the wholeness, the unity, the one, the source of all healing, all miracles, all that is. Flowing beyond the consciousness to your personality. Flowing to your mind, I think, I remember, I'm inspired, I'm depressed, maybe more. And flowing out to the body. Energy flowing into the arms, the legs, the head, the trunk of the body. And to the beating heart. Breathe out, be aware of your roots going deep into the earth. Still remembering that universe, that experience of unity. And you might think the words, I'm alive. Open them as if you have never seen the world before. Opening your eyes, looking around, and we'll say the invocation again. Toward the one. The perfection of love. harmony and beauty. The only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Do an experiment in the practice of Zikr. Is there anyone here who hasn't done Zikr before? So, the practice of Zikr, in the Vinayati order, we use Arabic phrases. Why? Because those are the ones we're using, you know. Could we use other phrases? Yes, of course we could, because all paths lead to the same goal. That's one of the precepts of this group. But we use these words, and what they mean is everything that exists is part of the one. I've learned to say that now in Maori. I've learned jargon in that direction from the Ojibwe and the Hopi peoples and the Yaqui, and I'm meeting more and more the Navajo, the Hualpai people, all different language, all the same. They're going to use Arabic. It's good. So we're going to do this practice of Zikr, and we're going to do the practice as if we are acknowledging something. Why are we doing this in Arabic? It's one of the root languages, and when you are speaking in a root language, the actual sounds that you are making have an effect on your being. That being that we were just exploring, that is unity, it's consciousness, it's personality, it's thinking, it's body, it's feeling, the wholeness. It acts as an agent of tuning. So keeping yourself open without thinking, oh, I have to try and stay connected. Just knowing that all we did was explore a natural state. We were just exploring the natural state of being. Now we'll do Zikr. And we're going to do a very simple Zikr, something that is just going with the heart. So can we have the heart? La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. You could even put your hand on your heart and feel the vibration of these sounds. La ilaha illallah. 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 Using the tool of thought to look around everything I'm experiencing, everything I'm feeling in this moment, every thought I'm having. I don't need to censor. It's all part of the divine.
A lot of times it just kind of becomes like a tricky intellectual exercise. brainwash you sometimes. So it's nice to have it as more of a practice.
Yeah, I guess I should have said, you can think of it as source, universe, whole, whatever it is that you use, the word you use, that I may have used God for. Because that changes for all of us throughout our lives. So thanks for saying something about that. Useful tools to apply in your living. Useful tools that you can take with you. Tools that help you feel that you are living your life's purpose. So that's a question that we might ask ourselves when I talk about that. How do you know you're living your life's purpose? Or, you know, people say, oh, discover the purpose of your life. That all sounds so beautiful. But what does that mean? And how do you know when you're doing it? So this is what we're about. Something to you. If the attitude is solid, the path becomes easy. Health, happiness, success, harmony to all these things in life, the attitude shows the way. It is the attitude that is the condition of virtue or sin. Therefore, have the right attitude. There is no greater virtue than to think aright, to speak aright, to act aright, and there is sure success. So I was looking at these words and thinking, what does that mean? What is Paramahansa talking about when he says this? Is he saying that we have to change the way we really are and try to be another way which would be a better us? I think that's the popular opinion. And my purposes these few days is to debunk popular opinion. If it's true that we are the unity of the whole creation, like a wave on the ocean, we're a wave, significant in our own way. Anybody swimming there could get splashed, so they know we're a wave and we're significant. We're part of the whole. The wave knows it's part of the ocean. If that's true, that we are that, and if it's true that we, with every breath, and remember, there is no life without breath. If you've ever seen a body without breath, you know it doesn't look like any of these bodies here. It looks like a lump of clay, doesn't it? There's nothing there. It's just clay. So, if it's true that we are that whole creation and we are participating in the very essence of that whole creation the entire time that we have a body, that we call that experience, that we call life, which is both precious and also very short in the scope of eternity, then it might be a good idea to be you. Because if you don't be you, no one else will, and will miss it. Will entirely miss it. I'm offering this as a koan. And so, on the one hand, we're eternity. On the other hand, we are constantly sharing the energy that keeps eternity moving, keeps the universe going. And each one of us is unique. Each one of us is unique. We each have something that is precious to share the rejects never got breath. Everyone is a work of art that is walking and breathing. There are no mistakes. You are not the only mistake. Didn't happen that way. So then what? Yes?
No, I was just reflecting on that little excerpt you read from Mercer about attitude. And he's not talking about attitude like we tend to use it like a judgment. This is, I'm on or I'm off. He's talking about a state of consciousness, to being present as the attunement, not, as the attitude, not a perception of an event. And, that brings a whole different state of being by saying, I'm going to be, with every breath, with everything that I do, has the vehicle of myself. With all intention, with all presence, with all everything, So it's that word is really kind of funny because, it intones something different than really what we describe it.
So I'm going to read you one more thing. This is from something of Pure Mercer tonight called Attitude. You can see it's a longer piece of paper than American languages. It's because I copied it as it came across my desk. Okay, so here's the other thing. If you can only realize God, Source, Universe, whatever your word is, if you can only realize God here, who is living in the heart of us. And no one is closer to us than that. Then no one else is capable of telling what is right. Then your God within you, within, tells you. I don't know these people, I don't know why I'm here. here. I came because I felt that it was right. I just had this feeling to come. What am I doing here? And this woman walks in and sits down next to me and starts mumbling, I don't know what I'm doing here. I came because I felt that it was right. Here I am sitting here and I'm looking over and here's this lady with a beaded hat and traditional dress. And I said, you're saying out loud my thing, my thought. And she said, oh, of course. And that was it. That was the beginning. And what I've discovered is that in the native traditions, it's much more acceptable to go with your gut. I'm using ordinary terms in order to take the flowery, oh, it's so holy, out of what's actually instructions on how to live successfully, which is what these teachings are. Okay, where are we at? So this idea that you trust your feeling, not the one that's trying to get you to do things that you know aren't good for you, not that one. The one that you just have a feeling this is what I should do, and the to say no to this other thing, or just a sense of, I would say just go with your gut. I used to work for Dun & Bradstreet. They have 32 companies, or they did then, and I was hired by Dun's plus Dun & Bradstreet. And the manager that hired me, he hired me because I thought I was going to a different interview, but I went to the wrong place. So I went to this office. I was supposed to go like a week later. I had the order wrong. I went to this office. I was supposed to go a week later, but I went in because I knew I was in the right place, and I said, I've come my interview, and that woman at the front desk said, if we're not doing interviews, you must be in the wrong place, but you know, I was a person that felt quite like I knew what I was doing. I had my list. I said, I'm supposed to be here today. And she said, I don't think so. I said, well, is the manager here? And she said, yes. And I said, is it so-and-so? Because I had it written on my list, I just had the wrong day. And she said, yes. And I said, well, you better ask him, because I'm supposed to be here today for an interview. So he came out, he said, I'm happy to interview you. And he interviewed me, and I left, and I didn't know that he thought it was a ploy. They hired me because they thought it was the most creative way to get an interview. And I didn't find that out for 2 years. But I went where I knew I should go. So his whole thing, he used to say things like, I don't care how you get it done, trust your gut and just let it happen. Even if you think it's luck, I don't care, get it done. That was his whole thing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great sweet teaching. And that's what I did. And that's what I did. And so, what does this mean, trust your gut? If you only can realize God, universe, source, here, that who is living in the heart of each one of us, and no one is closer to us than that. No one else is capable of telling you what is right. Then your God within tells you. So if you remember, each day I was going to give that experience of the boundless domain, the experience of gathering divine power. Now we're at the how can you tell whether what you're experiencing or what you're inclined to do is spiritual. part of a spiritual path, or is it magic, or something like that? This is a question that comes to everyone eventually, because like it or not, you do develop insight. You develop a gut sense about your life. Are you with me? And so that following of that gut sense takes a kind of courage, doesn't it? It takes a kind of courage to make that step and say, I am going to try this. I am going to do this. And it takes discernment to notice what is that guidance, that spirit of guidance, which you might call intuition or your gut or that sense of correctness, and to notice what is not that. So I want to give today one thing to think about. Does it make you squirm? Does it make you squirm inside when you think about following your intuition? That squirmy thing that either says, I feel a little uncomfortable, or says, oh, I feel so strong and powerful about doing this. Both of those are signs that this is not for you. If it makes you squirm, that would be a sign that you're dancing in the realm of what I would call ego, or if you're using the stuff of awakening, magic, black magic. I said, you're dancing in the realms of magic, of black magic. Black magic is just doing things because it makes you feel powerful. It's not coming from the divine. When it comes from the divine, we like to call that miracle or an amazing breakthrough or spiritual discovery. But you might think about somebody that knew a lot about spiritual practice, and yet something in you said, there's something not right here. And that's the squirmy place. That's the squirmy place that hasn't been listened to. One of the things that Pure Light used to say, he quoted Pure Russian and Icon a lot, all the time. I want to quote him for a minute. He used to say, a life that has been lived and you haven't tried anything is not as good as a life that's been lived when you've made mistakes. It's a wasted life. So now we bring up the squirmy place. The other squirmy place was a different one, and that says, what does that mean? Am I trying things? Am I taking up that risk of following my intuition? Am I trusting that my path, my unique path, is correct? Okay, your turn.
You're saying that's a different kind of squirm.
It's a different, yeah. Yes, you know that squirm. You know it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a different squirmy. That's not the squirmy as in this, that material that I'm receiving from somebody else, or that I want to share with someone because I feel so strong and powerful in this moment. That squirmy is
the squirmy you're talking about. That was the kind of squirmy where you get a little marching orders, but you go, oh my God.
That's one way that it can show itself.
Well,
Yes.
Orange theory.
Yes. Yeah. I'll give a very simple screening. You come to one of these camps or summer gatherings or summer schools, whatever I'm calling it this year, and you show up and there's all these people, and you look around and there are people and they're sitting there and they're in meditation and they look so blissed out. You're thinking to yourself, oh, I wish I could be that. I wish I could have that glorious look. They must be having such a wonderful experience. And what do you want to do? You want to get up and the same practices, the same things happening, and you want to get up and sing. You want to dance. You want to go and call your best friend and say, oh, I just love you. But you're thinking, well, that's not holy. Holy is this concept that I have about the proper way to behave when I'm at one of these places. And so what does that produce? You feel isolated. Anybody recognize this? You feel like, well, they get it and I don't get it. Or they all know something that I don't know. I wish I could do that. I remember I tried. I really tried to do this. I went to a class once and it was a celebration of the Pure Worship and Let It Come. I have this vivid memory of sitting in a class. I thought we were going to celebrate. It said we're going to celebrate the passing of Pure Worship and Let It Come. I thought we were going to celebrate. We all went into a room, we were very quiet. We sat down and we meditated for about 30 minutes and then we walked out and we had tea downstairs. Somewhere around minute 21, I was ready to explode. I just wanted to celebrate. I wanted to celebrate. That's my nature, is to want to, I wanted to talk about a life well lived. And we were meditating, which I like to do. And I started to think, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? They must be having an experience that I'm not having because I want to do something different. Talking right now about following guidance. So I do want to say that I did stay still for another 9 minutes, and then I had tea with everyone, and then I didn't go back because it wasn't my way.